I'll be talking a little bit about root causes of migration, particularly sending countries, as this has always been absent to the discussion of protection of migrant workers. Maybe providing a little bit of analysis of what Migrante Ontario's analysis is in terms of migration, and talk a little bit about caregivers, where a lot of Filipinos are working. To travel is the right of every person. Migration is a right. It's even speculated in the United Nations Charter of Human Rights. And this is the exact reason why migration is as old as humankind itself. People have been traveling to different places in order to find suitable places for them to survive. But today, aside from economic reasons, a number of migrant workers from the Philippines, from Mexico, from Guatemala, from the Caribbean, continuously growing because their own respective governments are exporting them. Their huge remittances that surpass their home country's major export earnings help cushion the deepening economic and political crisis of their own countries. In this recent so-called recession, migrants are most likely the victims and become targets of anti-worker, anti-migrant policies, while monopoly corporations have been getting bailouts. And the overall result of globalization is basically the destruction of local economies of countries of the South, like the Philippines, for example, a massive loss of jobs, livelihood, domination of foreign monopoly corporations in those countries. For example, in the Philippines, which is primarily an agricultural country, products that that's being planted are cash crops. For example, instead of planting rice, which is a subsistent crop, they plant asparagus, pineapple, even flowers. And when I was there visiting, a farmer would tell me, "We cannot eat flowers. We tried, but it does not work." So they're planting crops that benefit countries of the north, like Canada. Aside from that, corporations such as mining companies are really displacing people from villages in countries like the Philippines and other countries of the south. And for people in these countries, the situation has meant growing unemployment and deepening poverty. A lot of these countries live on less than $1 a day, and these working poor represent 20% of the total world employment. While it is obvious that there's an increasing number of people that are being driven by worsening economic and social conditions in their respective countries to seek employment abroad, the shrinking global market for labor is actually limiting the types of number of migrants that can actually find work overseas. In Canada, for example, a lot of migrants here are professionals. A lot of caregivers are nurses, for example, in the Philippines. A lot of workers in the service sector are either teachers in their own countries or engineers and stuff. But they're driven to low-skill work when they come to Canada. This competition among migrant workers from countries of the South are also increasing. This is because employment opportunities coming from traditional migrant-receiving countries like Canada are shrinking in the past years, coupled by enforcement of stricter immigration laws. In our experience as Filipinos, there are millions of Filipinos that have been forced abroad by sheer lack of opportunities in the Philippines, lack of decent jobs, livelihood in our country, and Philippines is facing a historic joblessness. At this point, we're up to 11% unemployment rate. This has resulted to more than 597,000 jobless Filipinos in the country since 2000. Number of Filipinos overseas are leaving every day. And the amount of remittances they sent back have been rising over the last three decades. The economy's dependence on overseas work is unprecedented, and there's about 8.2 million Filipinos working outside the Philippines at the moment. Filipinos overseas is already equivalent to a quarter of Filipino population, meaning there's currently 8 million Filipinos living outside the Philippines. The number of overseas Filipinos continues to rise, with sustained overseas Filipino workers deployment that reached a record of 1.1 million Filipinos that left the Philippines in 2007. That means there's an average of 3,000 Filipinos that leave the Philippines every day. working in 198 countries. Overseas Filipino remittances has reported by the Philippine Central Bank that it averaged to about $14 billion a year. So meaning these governments that send migrants really benefit from migrant labor, not only by diffusing the unemployment rate in their countries and the Philippines, for example, but also billions of dollars of remittances that's being sent back to the Philippines and countries of the South. Philippines is the largest among the most remittance-dependent countries in the world. Remittance flows to the third world have been conservatively estimated at $240 billion in 2007. The Philippines is one of the only five countries worldwide that receive more than $10 billion dollars in remittances annually. It is estimated that there are 17 billion remittance inflow in the country, and it was the fourth ranking in remittance sending countries next to India, China, and Mexico. These three economies are much bigger, however. India, for example's economy is seven times larger than the Philippines. China is 20 times larger, and Mexico is over six times larger. So their inward remittances are much less significant share of their respective economies. And for countries in the South, it has become a business of sending migrants abroad. From the time a migrant would leave the country, a migrant would pay an exuberant amount of fees from the agencies in the Philippines, for example, to government officials. And this is not including airfares and some fees that they need to pay the Canadian agencies or the Canadian government. It was estimated that a migrant from the Philippines that will go to Canada as a live-in caregiver would totally pay up to $10,000 just to work in the Greater Toronto Area. And when they come here, it is not automatic that they have work. A lot of them are victims of this so-called release upon arrival, where agencies have ghost employers that sign to these contracts in order for them to get a caregiver. But when they come here, they actually do not have an employer, and they needed to find an employer in order to continue to be part of the living caregiver program. Also, there are studies and researches that have shown that international migration of workers into Canada have been and continue to be structured by the interweaving economic, political, and ideological relations that is facilitated by the Canadian state through its immigration program. Just like any advanced capitalist country, Canada opens up and closes its doors and borders to migration in response to the dynamics of supply and demand for labor in the process of capitalist accumulation and in the context of global competition. In the past, it is relatively small population and shortage of skilled labor confronted by its drive for economic growth and industrialization. Also, Canada looks in favor for immigrants whose political and ideological preferences would tend towards the further development of a competitive capitalist system in Canada. These factors would combine to push Canada to open its doors to migration. And this would include Filipinos among immigrants that Canada want to come. In 2007, the Philippines became the number one source of migrants and immigrants in Canada. For three decades previously, Canada have been the destination of tens of thousands of Philippine migrants, mainly women, working as nannies, caregivers, and maids. They were brought to Canada under a special temporary workers program called the Live-In Caregiver Program. It has an added lure of offering landed immigrant status on the condition that they have to work with their employer for 2 years, living in the home of their employer. These conditions can be oppressive, exploitative, racist, and merely heartless. In 2002, the Canadian government has adopted a series of measures and amended the legislation to expand the temporary foreign worker program to virtually all sectors of workers. These changes are taking some of the worst features of the live-in caregiver program and applying them to other workers, while taking away the carrot that is the permanent residency at the end. In other words, Canada's immigration policy is shifting away from recruiting immigrants and permanent residents in favor of recruiting masses of temporary foreign workers. And permanent residency is only being offered and reserved for highly skilled workers and the rich. And of course, there are lots of horror stories, as Janet mentioned earlier. In the past 2 years, we've confronted with three major, relatively high-profile cases. One is the murder of a caregiver in a Mississauga mansion. It was a botched robbery, but the issue there is health and safety in the workplace. While caregivers and domestic workers are considered workers under the Employment Standards Act of Ontario, home is not defined as workplace. So there is no machinery to investigate workplaces. There is no machinery to address issues of health and safety in the workplaces for caregivers. And there's Elinita Pailanan, who came from Hong Kong as a caregiver, came to Canada. She died after 3 months staying in Canada because she do not have any OHIP or any medical coverage. She was refused to a medical facility because she does not have any medical or medical insurance. And the latest one was Juana Tejada, which is a caregiver who was refused status after diligently following the program and applying for permanent residency, but she was denied because she has cancer. After coming to Canada back in 2006, she passed the medical requirement, and it was strict medical requirement. But before a caregiver be able to apply for permanent residency, they have to go through another strict medical examination. And this examination she failed because they found out that she has cancer. Meanwhile, this illness, or whatever illness, they contracted while serving the Canadian people in Canada. So there are a lot of stories. We have tried to put together a rescue team just to pull caregivers out of the homes of their employers, either because of physical abuse. Last week, there was a caregiver who was hit by a cell phone and called stupid by her employer that we needed to pick up. The week before that, there was a caregiver who was sexually molested by her employer while feeding the eight-month-old child of this employer. And this is because of the program itself. The program itself is problematic, and it puts people into a very vulnerable situation. Part of this issues also comes struggle, right? Migrant workers are the first to feel the impacts of this changing trend of the global and regional crisis and their impacts on migration. That is why migrants have been expressing discontent in varied forms in these past years. Spontaneous protests in defense of their wages, job security and protection, and general workers' rights have occurred. More and more organizations of migrants have been gaining ground. They're leading the campaigns locally and are slowly being able to project themselves internationally through the help of migrant advocates. There's also inter-ethnic cooperation and solidarity among migrant workers, and immigrants have also been part and supportive of this struggle. Whatever it be, through conferences like this, or joint campaigns, their common interest intersects and have been born concrete activities for cooperation. A good example is Migrantes' work with No One Is Illegal and Justicia for Migrant Workers during the raid that happened in April 2, 2009. Craig will talk a little bit about that later on, but it is the cooperation of organizations that could really help in projecting these issues. The formation also of international alliances is important. Back in June 2008, a formation of International Migrants Alliance, a global alliance of migrant organizations around the world, was formed, addressing not only the issues of day-to-day problems of migrants, but also linking it to a global issue of migration, how countries of the South are selling workers to receiving countries of the North. Migrant workers are in their fight to reclaim dignity of labor and promote workers' rights and interests through their organizations. And I think one of the important aspects of May 2nd, the event on May 2nd, which the poster here, is really how workers, the Canadian workers, unite with migrant workers and fight for common struggles, and how we could build solidarity and fight for common campaigns. I will stop there for now and encourage discussions later on. And if folks have questions, particularly on the live-in caregiver program, please do ask. Thank you.